Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours.
Today, Terry Hershey and I explore one possible reason that America is so radically divided. Each side is firmly convinced that they are right. That's because each side will cite supposed factual information in support of their beliefs. But, you know, information is not the problem. It's about the source of our information. One of the big reasons for our strong battle lines just may be that our information is too biased. We tend to rely only on information that supports the stance that we've already agreed upon. Therefore, we simply end up talking to ourselves. Is there a middle ground? Is a middle ground even possible? In this podcast, Terry Hershey and I really wrestle with trying to figure out some way to have somewhat of a bipartisan dialogue. I hope you enjoy two guys stumbling around in hope of discovering a common ground. I think we almost get there, but it's in the second half of the episode. See for yourself as we welcome Terry Hershey. Yo, Hersh. Been a while. You know, Terry, it's been a while since we've been on the last show together. It seems, maybe it's not, but it feels like it. It's good to have you back.
Thanks. It was, I think the last time was right before the pandemic.
I think you kind of put that into your past memory now that we're moving out of it. And my guess is quite soon to move back into it again. Although,
no, but I mean, I call every inconvenience in my life now a pandemic.
That works. You know, I'm beginning to see, Terry, in the last couple of our podcasts that anytime I have a difficult subject or a difficult thought for a podcast, I come to you for feedback. So I'm throwing all the crap on you and letting you be the foil for me, especially today, because I think, once again, you and I may approach today's topic from different points of view, which is exactly what I want. And what I'd like to do is offer sort of an extended introduction so our listeners can understand the gist of what I'm getting at. So this is, give me a couple minutes on this. I'd like to begin with an old Neil Postman quote from his best-selling book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And the quote goes something like this. I don't have it exactly. I just remember it. While Americans may be the most entertained people in the world, they are the least informed. Now, I think that may have been true in 1985, but I don't think that's the case today. In fact, I think the case today is Americans may have become highly informed. And while it is true that informed people make better decisions, the critical aspect of that is what is the source of information that becomes the ground upon which we make our stands. And it's personal stands, political stands, theological stands. What is the information that we use to determine what our positions are? And our problem is that I think we suffer from too much prejudiced and biased information. I think you called it confirmation bias, which I'm going to ask you to explain to us. We tend to rely on information sources that only support what we already believe. You know, it's kind of like Fox News versus MSN News, MSN, NBC or MSN, whatever all those are. Unfortunately, too often, the information received only supports what we already believe, and it does not educate. As a result, our personal and political climates have become treacherously separated. And I'll close with this. The result is we end up with people that are talking to themselves. They either watch the right-wing news or the left-wing news or their particular group's news and not another particular group's news. And they end up talking to themselves while holding a somewhat nascent vitriol for anyone that holds a different point of view than them. That's my thesis. What do you think about that, if it was intelligible?
Known each other how many years?
My goodness, Terry, we are
35,
40 plus
1980,
40
plus years. Yeah. And even early on, back in the day, I forget the restaurant we used to meet at for lunches.
Knowles Hamburger Joint.
Yeah.
On the lake.
But we pulled no punches.
No, we did not. We did not.
We went after it even then. And so 40-some-odd years of debates and discussions, and debates is a good word, debates and discussions. And I'm glad you're having me talk about this subject today, because most of those debates with you and me, I was right.
I will say, I don't know that I would say most of them, but I would say a significant number of them, I will say that goes to my credit, and that I'm willing to change. You give me good data.
Well, not to mention the fact that I started with I was raised in a religious faith where there was only right and only wrong. There was no middle ground. There was no, I don't know. There was no, I'm not sure. None of that was allowed. You weren't free to admit that. You weren't free to even say that. And if you did believe it in your spirit or heart, you didn't fess up to it.
And you were an outcast.
So then you just made shit up.
And based on assumptions, was it not? Based on certain interpretations and assumptions that we are right.
Well, presuppositions, yeah. Yeah, that if this is true, then this is true.
Right.
But what's interesting is at that time in my life, I was starting to say, what is it okay to be wrong about? And by wrong, I mean, what is it okay to be unlearned about? And unlearned is not in a bad way. It means that I need to know more. What do I need to know more about? That's why the fights were good, because, but we need to start with this. Neither one of us needed to take the other person down. This is an important thing to start with. I didn't need to take you down.
Why was that,
I didn't need
Jerry?
To make,
what was going
need,
on? I mean, we need, you know, that's an excellent observation, and I see a need for that today.
Because you did not threaten me. You did not tell me that I was only Terry if I was this Terry or that Terry.
My goodness, I was that way 40 years ago? That's crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah, you, there was a whole part of the thing with you that you were at a part of time of your life where you were, one thing that you have in your core is curiosity.
Correct.
And curiosity is a big thing for you. And so you're always willing to then keep picking at stuff. And who knows why that we didn't need to take each other down. I mean, your intro talking about, mostly you talk about political stuff, but it can be religious. It can be any of them.
Of course, of course.
That we have to take somebody else down in order for it to be correct. This is not new, though, Charlie. I mean, your intro is as if this is new. I'm reading a book now called These Truths by, what's her name, Jill Lepore, I think. But anyway, it's about the history of the United States. Good Lord, Jesus. Every single thing you said could have been said in 1780.
And it was worse then, was it not?
Here's why. Well, this is the irony, because... But this gets to the point of what you said. You said we're ill-informed. We're not more. We are not even close to being more informed now. We just have more data swirling around us in a way that we cannot process.
Yes, I agree. That's why I called us biased or prejudicially informed. It's informed only to what we already believe.
Well, we have our data sources that we choose.
Right.
And yet at some point there's a data source. It's ironic that in some areas, some fields, some places in our life and world, we have no problem at all saying there's one data source. you go to a baseball game and there's a data source. No one fights for that. There's a data source. Isn't that interesting? And yet, if you sat next to somebody at the game, even though you guys don't argue about the fact that there's a data source there, there's strikes, there's balls, there's outs, there's runs, there's wins, there's losses, you have no problem with the data source. None. None whatsoever. But as soon as you mention, one of you says Republican or Democrat, oh my God, you don't have a data source. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, well, even in the data source of the baseball game, there are certain rules, but then the rules are debatable radically. So depending on the team you're on, you are going to interpret one data source, strike, ball, out, save. Was it, in fact, an infielder's fly rule? So there's still a lot of interpretation within the baseball. It's not.
I don't disagree with that part. But you're debating it based upon that particular fact. In other words, we know that ump calls them high.
Yes, or poorly.
Exactly. High meaning poorly. The thing you said about who was the guy you quoted at the beginning?
Neil Postman, and from
Postman. I know where that quote came from. We're not more informed now. We're not even close to informed now. Here's the point, Charlie. And this is the question I ask myself because I'm actually a news person. I read, and by news, I mean events of the world. That's what I mean. I want to know what's going on in my world. There are parts of the world where people are fighting issues, suffering issues, dealing with issues. I want to know that. I want to know that. So I'm a junkie about that stuff, and I read it. However, what's interesting about being informed is just because we get a lot of stuff, we're not more informed now, not even close.
Yeah, you know, and I think I agree with you, and I want to make a distinction between informed and I want to come back to, I think the chances are we listen more than the 80s, maybe not in the 60s, and in the 50s with Walter Cronkite and the gurus of newscasting, we seek more information from our preferred sources than we did in the 80s. And that's what I mean, more informed. I call it, to me, it's malinformed, misinformed, prejudicially informed. But there's a lot more information going out. If I talk to somebody, and, you know, I don't know how we can do this without getting too political. If I talk to somebody on the right, they are going to give me the greatest data in the world to support their views. And I talk to somebody on the left that is totally opposite of their view, and I will get data. As a matter of fact, I'll give you an example. During the election, I made an attempt for a while to watch, and I can tell you the names, to watch CNN, MSN, is it what, MSN, Fox News, and then a middle of the road. And I wanted to tell you, Terry, I was convinced by all of them. Their supposed data was so powerful that it was convincing. And so I can see how we have such disparaging and even treacherous separation between the views of people in our world that are informed by prejudicial information. So I think that's why I think is different than Postman. Postman, we weren't paying that much attention to the world news. We are more in entertainment, according to his book, anyway, into amusing ourselves to death. So that's what I mean by information, is that we're looking not at unbiased or a wide range so we can then come to some kind of conclusion.
Do you think anyone who watches any of those sources for news, it's just, Cronkite's always fascinating that we choose Cronkite. So therefore, everything he said was accurate? Just because we can say Cronkite?
No.
It's fascinating. Anyway, what's interesting to me is anybody who watches any of those sources of news, okay, they watch. I watch it because we always say we have a bias, and we do. and my bias is left. I'm unabashed about it. I'm not talking about politically, although that's true, but it's theologically, church-related, God-related. I lean left. I lean progressive. Okay? Here's my question is, in watching one of those sources, is it possible to watch that and still ask the question, what can, in other words, do I take it automatically at face value per se, or do I just throw it into the hopper and begin to understand and discover? In other words, is it possible that that's not the whole story?
That is a great question. And unfortunately, my answer is I fear most of the population does not do what you just suggested.
Okay, and that's a valid point. And so that's what's interesting. I fear that most of. See, that's what's interesting. But I want to start the other way around. I want to say some people don't. Some people accurately do. So in other words, if I'm going to have a conversation with someone, I don't want to automatically assume, although when I think of someone watching or getting their data from one particular source, I assume they never examine more. And I need to start with the assumption that we can have a conversation where that may be not completely accurate. In other words, there's still a conversation to be had, is the point I'm making.
And you know what is necessary in that conversation? I wanted to get to this later, but this is a good point to interject that. What is needed there is an effort to discover or create a common ground. And that we can find a common ground rather than, if we don't find a common ground, we just debate. But if we can find a common ground that we both agree on, then we can bring our positional points to it, discuss them, see how do they attribute to the benefit of both sides. But unless we find some sort of common ground, let me give you an example. I was listening to, it was a YouTube, but we were listening to it in the car, and it was by past Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who's just a brilliant humanitarian and theologian. And he was talking, he was at a conference. And at the conference, it was a religious conference, except there were a couple of, shall we say, dyed-in-the-wool communists from China. And when they were talking about their belief in communist philosophy, Mao, and communism as a public option, you know, and he didn't mean it in argumentative, he meant it to be in common ground. Well, there is a belief with you in the West and the way you view God, because you view God the way we view politics. You view God the way we view Mao. And you view the Bible the way we view communism. Now, although Rowan was really clear in saying that, you know, there was some troubles with the comparison, he says, it did show me it was a common ground. We both believe in authority, in an authority that is outside of ourselves. And that indeed itself became common ground for discussion. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Of course it does. I've written about confirmation bias before, but I'll read you the definition. We judge new ideas based on the ease with which they fit in with or confirm the only standard we have, which is old ideas, old information, and trusted authorities. Your thing about which source. As a result, our framing story, now this is the key, our belief system, our paradigm, our narrative, what's the narrative by which we view, quote, reality, excludes whatever doesn't fit in.
That's precisely my point.
Confirmation bias starts with that can't be true. In the only thing that can't be true is the flat earthers. Let's just start with something everybody can, oh, of course, the flat earth thing, that makes sense. See, nobody believes that anymore. You know, which is not true. There's a flat earth society. You realize that, right?
A flat earth society? I'm not sure what you mean.
Flat earth.
flat earth. Oh, no. There's evidence for a flat earth?
You see, that's Charlie. You're not open to new ideas. There is a society in the world that still believes the earth is flat. Now, what's fun about that is two things. One is we assume, well, that's easy. Nobody believes that anymore. So that doesn't go into our confirmation bias. But when it comes to new stuff, it's hard to admit that it's not in our confirmation bias. But one of my favorite Facebook quotes, because I just loved watching this, the Flat Earth Society has a Facebook page, as everyone does. Of course, they have a Facebook page. And the Flat Earth Society are proud that they have many members of their society from around the globe.
Okay.
The Flat Earth Society has members from around the globe.
So how do we come to concurrence? How do we find common ground? In my mind, the Flat Earth Society, it really is a one-off. It's not going to be a debate among the majority of our population in the United States.
And I'm standing in a pulpit today, and half of my congregation tells me that the current president is not our current president because he wasn't elected. And they're telling me not only was he not elected, but the election was stolen. And
yeah.
They're telling me that not only was it stolen, and then they give me reasons why. And
yeah.
You're telling me Flat Earth is a one-off.
Well, Flat Earth is, to me, minor compared to that, but that you're making my point. You're confirming my point.
My job as the pastor of that church is your question is how in the hell do I find common ground?
And you're looking for an answer from me.
No, the answer to the question is I leave the pastor. I get another job.
But that doesn't resolve the issue, does it?
No. The issue is, I start with a different question. The question is, that particular one about the election, it's a provable thing. That's a provable thing.
Let me say, it's provable, except if you're strongly right, and then they will argue it's provable that it's not. Now, I don't know how they argue that.
But I have to start with the question you're asking is, how do I find common ground? I ask a different question. And the question is not specifically about the rightness or wrongness of whatever we're debating. The question is, what kind of world do you want to live in here?
That's a great common ground question. I love that, Terry.
And I'm talking about here. Let's be really specific. We're sitting in the same damn church. What kind of world do you want in these pews? What are the values that we are going to practice with other people in these pews?
Or even outside these pews.
Yes, no, but let's start in these pews because we can't even get it straight here. Let's start here. Then to your point, yes, once you get bigger than that, then you ask the question. But I seriously wonder when I hear people talk whether they've ever asked that question. If any nuance of my answer to that is correcting the wrong people, then I don't understand the question.
It does require, as much as I dislike this terminology, it really does require some kind of taking of a side. Somehow taking, you know, assuming a position.
And, nothing wrong with that. I mean,
right. You know what I'm calling it today? I'm calling it for a pliant certainty. That we need to be certain, but it needs to be pliant. It needs to be open-ended. I wrote it from a Seth Godin blog that it's a certainty that begs for accuracy. And the problem with the certainty and the accuracy is, to what or by what standard do we measure accuracy? Seth Godin wrote a great blog a couple days ago on the value of accuracy over certainty, and my question was, how do you determine accuracy? Like statistical data. You know, statistical data, there is no such thing in my mind as data-proven statistical accuracy because I am dealing with my with our productivity in Africa with statistics. And it all depends on how you interpret those statistics. Different statisticians will interpret those statistics differently and can be actually quite opposite in determining the conclusions of the statistic. So much of our accuracy, our fact-checking, boils down to opinion. It boils down to what filter that information goes through. And that's why, I'm not going to have answers on this podcast. I'm just presenting an opportunity for those of us listening to suggest it's essential that we are open and not closed. Otherwise, we just have this society that has a penchant for divisivism and has no shot at reconciliation.
I'd ask you more questions about the Uganda thing, because that's going to happen with anything. It's always fun when you and I, because we're unabashed talking core politics. We have no problem with that. But the wonderful irony of what you do in Uganda is very political.
Oh, very.
It is. Yeah. Extremely, extraordinarily political, which means the well-being of people, in that case, in a particular country in Africa. All right?
I would say it can get political when the government gets involved, but where we are in the very rural areas, it's very humanitarian. And it's not.
Now, that's a fascinating thing to say, that it's humanitarian, Chuck, because of course it's humanitarian, but political means how do you work together as people? That's just the basic definition.
Oh, yes,
of
yes, yes. If we take the fundamental definition.
Political.
Yeah, if you take that fundamental definition, you're right. But yeah. How many people define politics as such?
I'm just telling you that's what it is.
But the majority of the populace will not define politics that way.
I'm just saying, but that's what it is. And what's great about this conversation is I had a great point to make, and I've forgotten it already because we went somewhere else. But it was going to be awesome.
Well, doggone it. I'm sorry. I hated to take you that way.
Where were we?
All over the map, Terry, trying to figure
yeah.
this issue out. Information that supports our preconceived notions. I have strong friends that are extreme right, that are very influential, and their facts and their data are really just superb. Now, I happen to personally not agree with a great number of it. And then I have, I wouldn't say as many strong friends on the left, but I have good strong friends on the left that, like yourself, that give me excellent data that contradicts what my people on the right said. What's a guy like me to believe? Where am I going to go?
There's two kinds of data, and this is obviously a generalization, but there are two kinds of data. This is the conversation about climate. What would be accurate? In other words, there's a number attached, and this has to do with baseball, too. Then there are elements of that we skew. But the other kind of data is how we navigate where we go from here with this subject. That's a different kind of data.
Hmm.
And we can have variations on that. We can have differences on that. That's a wonderful part about it.
But we must first accept the data.
Yeah, for example, the temperature of the globe is X. That's unchallenged. Now, where we go from here, okay, now that part of that, you have an interpretation, I have an interpretation. But now, at least, what kind of world do you want to live in? Now we can at least confirm, we can come back to that.
And that, is it not the common ground that we were referring to?
Many of my books are about self-care. My
yes.
quote, ministry is about refueling.
Yes.
If I'm not at home in my own skin, I literally am not worthless, but I'm close. I've got nothing to give, and I don't see things clearly. And I'm telling you, this subject is informed by that. Because we're crazy in terms of whether we don't take care of ourselves, we are more susceptible to confirmation bias. Because we're not at home in our own skin. If I'm at home in my own skin, I can learn something, I can change, I can say, oh, that's new. I can say, oh, that's good. I can say, I'm not sure. In other words, there's a discussion now. It doesn't take my identity away.
You know, that's very, and that's very true of historical, I hate to use the word mystical Christianity. I need to find another term. But, and that is the small self versus the true self, and that we so much live in the small self, which is comprised primarily of selfishness and fear. And as long as we live in the realms of selfishness and fear, we're going to be in protection mode. In protection mode.
So, Charlie, that your thing right now, your setup to the whole show is that's perfect. Your setup to the whole show is the way I'll navigate this subject today, Charlie, depends on whether I navigate it with my small self. What is the other one? Or my
true,
big self.
True self. Yeah, it is true.
Exactly. That's exactly the right. And so what's interesting is, what's at stake is, how do I now make choices so that I live for my true self? In other words, instead of asking, how do I defend my position? How do I be right or wrong? In other words, that's not even second or third.
And the beginning of that, according to my teachers, is you don't begin with the true self. You begin with the small self. And you start saying, how am I selfish? How am I fearful? How am I into possessions and power and prestige? And we evaluate ourselves on a regular basis, because the teachers all talk about annihilation of the small self. And when we annihilate the small self, we provide opportunity for that true self, which was created, which was made at creation. And it's part of the creation intent. It's part of the closeness we can get with divinity. But we have to get ourselves out of the way. And I think that has to do exactly as you said with the subject of this show, and that we are our own enemies, and that we get in the way of truth and reconciliation because of our fears and our needs to protect ourselves, our pride, our wanting for credit, you know, so many things, and all of that comes from insecurities and fears. And those are the things
that we have to deal with. Yeah, that's why to the point of these days, what you're talking about these days with the massive, quote, what you call information, I don't necessarily agree with that. But the point is,
right.
we're inundated with data. There's no doubt about that. Okay, we're inundated. But what's interesting in the fighting and discussion is if the anger level is high, that says to me, this is not a question about dad anymore. This is a question about small self.
There you go. There you go. Great observation. There you go. If the anger level is high.
So what I need to do is step back from that. In other words, I don't need to prove you wrong. That's not the point anymore. And by the way, given the whole thing about this whole subject, this didn't start now. I'll give you a quote from, let's say, 2,000 years ago. There's a group of people said, excuse me, can anything good come out of Galilee?
I think it was Nazareth.
Oh, yeah, I know. But it was somewhere
in there. Yeah, you're right. I was going to write a blog that I started a blog this weekend and just didn't have the wherewithal to finish it, but I called it Own Your Irritation. And here's a quote, and this will really have you know, impact our discussion. And the quote says, every time you find yourself irritated with someone, the one you need to look at is yourself. The question is not what is wrong with this person, but what does this irritation tell me about myself? That's what you're getting at. You know, when you're highly angry about something, what is that telling you about yourself? Not what is that telling you about the person you're angry with, but what is that telling you about your small needs, that they are not getting satisfied and that you are being challenged and that you're fearful?
So it's a story I've told for years about, it's a true story about an ad for the Humane Society. It was back in the day of Life and Magazine, et cetera. There's a puppy and kitten. And of course, they're wanting people to get puppies and kittens at the Humane Society. But the ad quote over the top of the puppy kit said this, it's who owns them that makes them important. That was what you just said.
So is the deal, Terry, that we must own ourselves?
I have to start with that personal, internal question, who or what owns me? Why do I let that person get to me so much?
Yeah, and that is, on a humanistic level, that is me owning me. On a divine level, that is me being owned by a non-prejudicial God. Prejudicial God.
Correct.
We're not going to take a break today, and I think we've covered a lot of information, and I think there's plenty to ponder on. I want to close with a discussion on something you and I talked about. As perhaps it could be a path to common ground, but it is certainly a path to compassion and to a methodology to question our theology, our personness, and our politics. Now, I will go back to a story 40 years back when I was in seminary. When I was in seminary, I went to a conservative Baptist seminary, and there were two major issues. One of them still is going on, one is not. But one was marriage, remarriage and divorce, that according to the Bible was not, in my seminary's position, was not acceptable, and the other was abortion. And there were all kinds of theologies floating around, books floating around, classes floating around, everybody quoting Bible and quoting their positions and quoting historical positions and whatever theologian they could get to support their ideals. And it came to me, Terry, that the individuals, the professors that were strongly in favor of, you know, was strongly the against divorce and remarriage and against abortion. And it occurred to me that until you can put a face on your theology, it means nothing. Until you can put a face on your ideology, it is a meaningless ideology. And therefore, if it is your daughter or son or grandchild, until you can put that face and say, no, you cannot remarry, no, you have to go 9 months of pregnancy, it doesn't mean anything. It's all in paper and it's all BS. Does that strike you anyway?
100% true. That would be the answer to your question, what kind of world do you want to live in? And one of the answers, you're going to have like five answers. One of them is, I have to see you, or that I have to see a person. In other words, I have to acknowledge that's a person.
Absolutely, and that is a person. And the more personal I can make that, the better off I am. Like you know, I don't know if I'm speaking out of class, but you had some medical issues, and I showed you statistics that said 96% of Americans were insured, and you said, "What about X?" And you explained your situation, and it just was an aha for me, saying, well, this was not covered in our medical insurance and in your medical insurance, and it would have bankrupted.
So there That's was a, accurate.
So there was a face on that supposed no problem, all of a sudden had a problem because one of my best friends was in deep trouble as a result. And I think that we can, that as we do that, as we go along and we put a face on it and we put a compassionate face and we put the compassionate face of the Christ on it, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different ballgame.
It's the same sort of thing where I can debate, I can have all kinds of wonderful debates with you about whether there's hunger or world hunger, or there's enough food. And I can stare at you while I'm debating that. And you haven't eaten in days. I can't do that anymore now. The point is, there's a face there. The point about my data is not relevant to the fact that, first of all, feed that guy.
And isn't that a very biblical talk about
The thing
that?
About biblical is, because this is my other thing that I talk about, is the sacrament of the present moment. is that only what matters right now is the sacrament of the present moment.
Talk to me about that as a sacrament.
The sacrament means that this moment, the ordinary, is the hiding place for the holy. And it's an opportunity for me to affirm that holiness alive and well in you.
Brilliantly said.
And whatever gesture I make with you, having to do with caring, kindness, space, listening, even if I don't understand, even if I don't agree, I make that space.
You sound like a favorite author, Frederick Buechner. That's much of what he. That's what much well, of what he
that'd
writes
be,
about.
That'd be prime territory to be with Buechner.
Yeah, yeah, but that's much of what he writes about. So, you know, let's kind of together wrap up. But we do have sides, and I'm not talking just political sides. We do have personal sides. We do have a tendency to support those with information that only engenders greater attribution to the side that we take, and we are reluctant to look at other positions and evaluate them as perhaps very, very meaningful positions, and that perhaps one remedy is to, when you can personalize a position, that position no longer becomes a position, it becomes a sacrament of the present moment.
Yeah. I'm going to...
Didn't quite hit it, huh?
Charlie, this is very personal to me because I'm about to go to the Upper Peninsula, Michigan. My father died in October, but we couldn't go there because of COVID. He was cremated. So we're going up in the end of April to scatter his ashes in a place where he had requested. Place I actually want a deer camp where I went as a boy. So we'll be there in April with my siblings. So I have siblings who, this is to your point of your discussion, who A, don't believe COVID is real. It doesn't exist. There is no COVID. They believe B, wearing masks is a violation of every right they have as a human being. They believe C, this has nothing to do with politics. I'm telling you what they believe and how they live. They believe that obviously the current president is not the president. In other words, but let's skip the president part. And so this whole discussion today is, I'm showing up there, and what's the first step? What do I do? And the answer to the question is, what's for dinner and what can I cook?
Yes. And then perhaps, how can we honor Dad?
And tell me what you think about Dad, exactly.
What a troubled world we live in, but I think conversations like this, I think open conversations, expression of differences of opinion, but at the same time, an effort to understand where everyone else, where someone else is coming from, is just so essential. I hope our listeners can grab some of that. Terry, I thank you so much for your willingness to explore such uncomfortable territories with me that are not easy answers, and yet they're just exploring it. It's very kind of you to be willing to do that.
Thank you. You know, the irony is, it's not uncomfortable for me. It's not.
Well, it's always, when you're doing a podcast, it's always dangerous, you know, wondering who you're going to tick off. But, you know, I have to start with
whatever I say, someone will be pissed off. I start with that.
Yep. And if they're not, then you haven't said anything worthwhile.
Yeah, so then I have to go back to, what did I mean to say, and why does it matter to me, and what kind of world do I want to live in?
Well said. Thank you, brother. It's always, always the delight. And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And really, check out our website. You know, you can get easy access to podcasts and blogs, and you'll find it interesting. And until next, as always, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.